You know, I look at what we just experienced and say amazing. Because every shirt is a name, and every name is a story. We didn't just take a bunch of shirts and tack something on it. Those are all real lives and real stories and real transformation. And God's not quite done with us yet. We've got a pretty good start. That's what Easter's all about, isn't it? The great I am. The God that the world thought they could kill, but chose to rise on the third day, saying, I am greater than anything. You know, it was sometime during elementary school that I was introduced to the mathematical greater than symbol. Now, I was never very good at math, and that's why they invented calculators for people like me. And I would always get the greater than symbol confused with the less than symbol. It was all very frustrating. That ever happened to anybody? Besides me. This one person gave me some love this morning. Thank you. Thank you. Got nervous for just a second. It was very frustrating getting those two confused. And you know, when it comes to life and faith, I still think we get them a bit mixed up. What's greater than or less than? What in my life is of high value and what in my life is low value? See, at Easter, Jesus makes this proclamation. I am greater than whatever it is you want to say. Today, as we focus on the Gospel of Matthew, chapters 27 and 28, there are three spheres of life that affect all of us in very, very different ways. There are three spheres of life that we find in these two chapters that Jesus says, I am greater than all of them. Beginning in chapter 27, Jesus says, I am greater than the world. The world tried to kill Jesus. The world tried to crucify Jesus. And so they did. They put him in a tomb. And we read in Matthew chapter 27 that the chief priests and the Pharisees, well, they all got a little bit nervous. And they went to Pilate and they said, Sir, we remember that while he was still alive, he said, after 3 days, I'm going to rise again. So would you give an order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day? In other words, we don't want Jesus coming out. Otherwise, the disciples may come and steal the body and tell people he's risen from the dead. And this last deception will be greater than the first. Take a guard, Pilate answered. Go and make the tomb as secure as you know how. So they went to the tomb and they secured it by putting a seal on the stone and they posted a guard. See, the world tried to be greater than Jesus. They tried to keep him in the grave. They posted guards. They even put a seal on the tomb. Truth is, sometimes it seems like this world is greater than my ability to deal with it. And sometimes in my world, it seems like the world is greater than Jesus. See, there are some things that I need to live well in this world. There are some things you need to live well in this world. We all need safety. We all need to feel secure. I feel secure by having a job. I feel secure by having a home. It makes me feel safe. And I have some physical needs. I need food. I need water to drink at the very least. I need to exercise. I have relational needs just like you. I was created to be in relationship with other people. So I need to have healthy, life-giving relationships to live well. And I need to feel valued just like you need to feel valued. I need to know that I have meaning and purpose in my life. Now, there are things in this world that threaten those four things that I need. Jesus even told us this would happen. In John chapter 16, Jesus said, in this world, you're going to have trouble. The word trouble literally means to be squeezed. In this world, you're going to be squeezed. In this world, your safety will be squeezed. In this world, the physical needs that you have will be squeezed. There are people all around the globe that right now are just looking for a meal and some clean water to drink. Our relationships will be squeezed. You ever had a relationship squeezed? Anybody? And your value will be squeezed. But in the end, Jesus said, I am greater than whatever it is that squeezes you. Because he says, take heart, for I have overcome the world. A statement that becomes true on Easter morning. See, the world did try to be greater than Jesus. But then we read Matthew chapter 28, verse 1. It says, after the Sabbath, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and he sat on it. I love that. Sat on it. His appearance was like lightning and his clothes were as white as snow. And the guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. Now, when that angel came and he sat on it, I think he was making a statement. See, the angel didn't come to let Jesus out like he was some kind of cosmic doorman. Jesus was already gone. And the angel didn't sit on the stone because he was tired. He sat on the stone as a statement, and the statement was, Jesus is greater than this world and anything that you can throw at him. You think a stone's going to keep him in the grave? But even when things are good for me, Jesus is greater than that too. My life is actually pretty good right now. Oh, there have been moments, but my life is pretty good. I have a good health. I have a great family. I live in a nice house. I drive a decent car. I have a job that I love. But Jesus is even greater than all of those things. He's greater than my comfort. He's greater than my certainty. And there are some things I'm pretty certain of in this life. There are some things that I think I'm right about. You might think I'm wrong, but I think I'm right, so I'm right, right? Right. And Jesus is even greater than my certainty, and he's certainly greater than my expectations, because like you, I have some expectations of this life. And I wonder, will I allow God to be greater than my expectations? See, Jesus is greater than this world. But he's also greater than our fears. In Matthew chapter 28, the angel appears to these women, Mary and Mary. And the first thing he says to them is, do not be afraid, for I know that you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He's not here. He has risen from the dead, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go and tell his disciples he has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you'll see him. Now I've told you. So the woman hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. And suddenly, Jesus meets them. Greetings, he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said, do not be afraid. Fear. We all have them. We all have reasons to be afraid. Some of our fears are silly. I have a whole list of silly fears, just like you do. One of my silly fears is I don't like small spaces. I guess you would call that being claustrophobic. I used to work with teenagers, and they were always messing with me. And I remember one year I took a group of them on a camping trip. It was great. We loaded up some vans. We loaded all of our gear into a small enclosed trailer and off we went. It was a fabulous weekend. Packed things back up into that small trailer and went back home. Got to the parking lot and I assigned three strapping young men to unload all of the gear from the trailer. About halfway through the job, they said to me, hey, Mike, could you come and help us? We can't get the stuff in the back. Now, I didn't really think that through when I climbed into the trailer because these were three strapping young men. One of the teens who weighed, I kid you not, about 310 pounds, pushed me into the trailer while the other two tried to padlock and close the door, and I freaked out because remember, I don't like small spaces. And what I did what any natural human being would do. I kicked the doors as hard as I could, and people went flying. I got up, got out of the trailer, and looked at the three young men laying on the ground, and I said, I don't like small spaces. Now you know. We've all got fears. Well, there are several types of fear. We all have healthy fear, and we need healthy fear. Healthy fear is a good thing. Healthy fear tells you that if you're walking down the street and you see a rattlesnake, don't touch it. Healthy fear tells us to make sure our children look both ways before they cross the road. We need healthy fear. We also have alarming fear. Alarming fear kicks in when you sense danger or threat. Your adrenaline heightens, your heart rate goes up. It's important. We need to have that. But then there is debilitating fear. The kind of fear that keeps you from living fully. The kind of fear that keeps you from living the life that Jesus wants you to live. We've all experienced debilitating fear. Maybe you got a diagnosis and it debilitated you. Someone said, I'm leaving. You were debilitated. There was a death. See, psychologists would tell us that there are five basic fears. The first is the fear of extinction or the fear of death. None of us want to talk about it, think about it, or experience it. Number two, there's the fear of mutilation, the fear of being hurt. There are some things we don't do because we don't want to get hurt. And the older we get, the more this fear becomes a reality. When I was a teenager, I loved to skateboard. I had ramps in my front yard. We had a half pipe, if you know what that is, in our backyard. I don't do that anymore. Why? Fear of mutilation. That's why. Then there's the fear of the loss of autonomy, the fear of being trapped by either circumstance or physical restriction. We also have the fear of separation, the fear of abandonment, or the fear of rejection. And finally, there's the fear of what's called the ego death, the fear of humiliation, the fear of shame. Fear can be debilitating. But Jesus says, do not be afraid. He's saying, I want you to evaluate your fear in light of who I am. I want you to evaluate your fear in light of what Easter is all about. See, Jesus' followers were afraid. Why were they afraid? Well, the world as they'd known it was turned literally upside down. They had no security. They placed all of their hope in this one man, and now he was gone, crucified, dead, finished. I suppose they had to wonder, are we next? Are we guilty by association? Are the people that killed Jesus going to kill us too? There's lack of security, fear for their lives. Everything was uncertain. I had a friend from years ago. He had this dream of becoming a minister, a pastor. He was in his late 40s, but he really felt this desire, and he had a pastor friend who called him and said, I'm going to start a new church in Florida. Would you move from out west to come and help me? Would you come and be my assistant? To my friend, this was the opportunity of a lifetime. So he quit his well-paying job. He moved his family from out west to southern Florida. He rented a home, put his son in a new school, got settled, and then a couple of weeks later, his friend said, I've changed my mind. I'm not going to do it after all. I hope things go well for you. What do you do with that? He was crushed. He changed everything. His whole life was turned upside down. He moved his family thousands of miles to pursue a hope and a dream, and now it was gone. I'm sure that's how Jesus' disciples felt. But the difference is Jesus told them exactly what was going to happen. Truth is, they left everything to follow him. They left careers. They left stability to follow the one who was the Messiah, the Savior of the world, and then he died. Now, Jesus told them this was going to happen. They simply did not listen. They were faced with their troubles, and they were faced with their fears. They were faced with the world, but the message of Jesus is this. I am greater well, I'm greater than death. Jesus is greater than death. The angel told Mary and Mary in Matthew chapter 28, he has risen from the dead. See, death is one of the greatest tensions of life, isn't it? In October of this last year, my grandmother died. We called her Nana. I think I was her favorite. I was very close with her. Matter of fact, I'm convinced I was her favorite. I guess we'll never know. She was in her late 90s, and she was my last living grandparent, and she was one of those bigger-than-life kind of people. My grandmother, even at 96 years old, was in the kitchen cooking pasta and screaming at the TV as the Buffalo Sabres were losing yet another hockey game. That was her life. And my grandmother was one of my biggest fans. 2 years ago, she came here to Wisconsin to visit me, and she wanted to come to church at Northbrook on the weekend. Now understand, my grandmother was a very dedicated Catholic. That's all she'd ever known. And she wanted to come here, and I said, oh, it's going to be a little different than what you're used to. It's going to feel different. It's going to sound different. I want to come and see what you do. So she came. And she sat right there on the front row. In this building, one of the worst places to sit, is on the front row. That's where she sat. I was nervous. I've been doing this a long time, but I was so nervous the day my grandmother came. So we went about our normal service, our normal routine. And at the end, I walked up to her and I said, Nana, what did you think? And she said, she had tears in her eyes. She said, oh, it was so beautiful. I loved it. I hope I can come back again. She was never able to. When I received the news that she'd passed, it didn't seem real. You ever have people in your life you think they're just going to live forever? There was a point I thought she was going to outlive me the way that she was going. And so I packed up my family and traveled back to New York where she lived for the funeral. Now, my family is very large, and everything you think an Italian funeral would be like, it was. It was very loud. Very big. My family is something. And every once in a while, though, I would steal away from all the hoopla. You know how things get when you haven't seen people in a while. And I would walk up to my relatives and they'd say, oh, Michael, John, you've gotten so big. I haven't seen you in 30 years. Of course I've gotten big. The last time you saw me, I was 8. And I would steal away from all of that, and I would stand in front of the casket. It's kind of numb. You know that numb feeling? And it was like there was a conversation going on in my head with myself and with God, and I stood there and I said, I don't totally get all of this. Because see, death is the great equalizer. Last I checked, the death rate hovers right around 100%. It's the great separator. It's a source of great mystery, and it's a creator of great doubts. But when Jesus rose from the dead, he was fulfilling a statement that he'd made sometime earlier. See, Jesus said in the book of John, chapter 14, verse 6, Jesus said, I am the way, I'm the truth, and I'm the life. Jesus wasn't stating a philosophy. Jesus wasn't stating a good idea when he uttered those words. He said, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. And then when he rose from the dead, he fulfilled those words and that statement. But death is still the great creator of doubts. I mean, it's one thing to hear a sermon. It's one thing to sit in church and hear about what's coming eventually. And it's an entirely another thing to stand in front of a casket, or better yet, be in it. Because we've all had those moments, if we're honest, in which we've said, what really happens? I know we try to be very religious and very confident, but every human being I've ever met, even the person of greatest faith, has had those moments, those doubts. And on Easter Sunday, Jesus said, I'm even greater than your doubts. Greater than death, I'm greater than it all. But maybe in your life, Jesus appears to be less than. Less than the chaos of your world, less than your fear, maybe even less than death. What is it this morning that you need God to be greater than? I suppose we all have something. And I want us today to think about that question. What do I need God to be greater than? To help us with that, if you want to reach into your service folder, there's a small square card in there. And it simply says, God is, with the greater than symbol. I want you to take a moment right here on Easter Sunday morning. And I want you to have a moment with God. He's here. He's listening. As you hold that small card in your hand, I want to encourage you to take a moment and write in the blank white space whatever it is that you need God to be greater than. Maybe you need God to be greater than your fear. Maybe you need God to be greater than your sickness. Maybe you need God to be greater than the relational turmoil you're in right now. Maybe you need God to be greater than your doubts. Maybe you need God to be greater than your frustrations or your disappointments or your anger. Maybe you need God to be greater than your unemployment. Maybe you need God to be greater than religion. Whatever it is, I want you to take a moment, just you and God right now, and whatever it is, as a prayer, write that word into that white blank space. Fear does not intimidate you, and death could not hold you. on Easter Sunday, we celebrate what it is that you've done. Amen. As we close at Northbrook, we always take a moment and fill out this card. It's called the Northbrook Connection Card. I know some of you are thinking, I didn't know I had to come to church and fill out so much paperwork. But we think it's important to respond. And so again, I want to encourage you to fill that card out with as much information as you feel comfortable giving us. At the bottom it says, my next step. One of the things that we value as a church is taking the next step. We believe that the Bible is extremely applicable. We believe it's transformative. We believe it's relevant. The first next step says, today for the very first time I'm accepting Jesus as my Savior. I have to ask, is God greater than whatever it is you wrote on that card? Maybe you're here today and there are some things in this world that are squeezing you. Maybe you're wrestling with debilitating fear or doubt or frustration. And Jesus wants you to know that today He's greater than all of those things. Maybe you're here today and you would not necessarily call yourself a person of faith. Maybe you're here because it's what you do on Easter. Maybe you're here and you're searching. Maybe you'd say, Jesus really isn't greater than anything in my life because, quite frankly, Jesus isn't a part of my life. And does it even really matter? You might say yes. Say yes, because the Apostle Paul, as he wrote to the church at Rome, he said these words, for all have sinned and all have fallen short of the glory of God. All of us have been separated from God. But the good news is that because of Easter, the Apostle Paul continues to write that if we confess with our mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised Him from the dead, you will be saved. If you're here today and you say, Mike, maybe that's what I need. I want to invite you on this incredible journey of faith that started for me 20 years ago. It's changed my whole life. And I want to invite you on that same journey. If that's you and you say, Mike, that's what I need, I want to encourage you to check that box and allow us to connect with you, allow us to talk with you about this marvelous relationship and journey with Christ. And secondly, the second next step, God is greater than. If you would write on this card, whatever you wrote on the small card, we'd like to pray with you. We'd like to take all these cards and pray with you as you're on this incredible walk with Jesus. So would you take a moment now and fill out the connection card as a simple act of response to the Easter message on Easter morning. Whatever it is we wrote on those cards, you are greater than the world, our fear, and you're greater than death. And we walk out of here today knowing in confidence that you're with us. We thank you for the resurrection. And now, oh God, we continue our worship by giving of our finances. We give our tithes and our offerings to you to further your work, your resurrection work, both here in our community and around our world. Amen.